Good morning. It's Monday, June 2nd. I'm Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, conflicting reports of gunfire at a controversial Gaza aid site, how Putin built the ultimate war machine economy, and what happens when millions of bees escape in a small city. But first, to Boulder, Colorado, where a man has been arrested after setting fire to people who were participating in a march calling for the release of Israeli hostages. Six people between the ages of 67 and 88 were taken to the hospital with burn injuries, which police said ranged from minor to very serious, and at least one last night in critical condition. FBI said the man, who has been identified as 45-year-old Mohammed Sabri Soliman, was seen using a makeshift flamethrower and throwing an incendiary device into a crowd at around midday on the Pearl Street Mall. Authorities said he yelled "Free Palestine" as he attacked. In a news conference later on Sunday, FBI Special Agent Mark McCulloch said they were treating it as an act of terrorism.
Sadly, attacks like this are becoming too common across the country. This is an example of how perpetrators of violence continue to threaten communities across our nation. It's our job, the FBI, the Boulder Police, and our law enforcement and community partners, to bring these criminals to justice and keep our communities safe.
He added that they were still early in the investigation, interviewing key witnesses, but they would seek to deliver justice swiftly.
Our strength as a society comes from our shared values and our commitment to protecting one another. Any attempt to divide us through fear or harm has no place in Boulder, in Colorado, or anywhere in our nation.
The event that was targeted was a regular, peaceful gathering called Run for Their Lives, put on by an organization that hosts weekly runs and walks across the country to bring attention to the Israeli hostages taken by Hamas during its October 7th, 2023 attack. The group in Boulder has reportedly met up every week since Thanksgiving of 2023. There are 58 hostages still in Gaza, and around 20 are believed to still be alive. This attack came just 11 days after the fatal shooting of a young couple working at the Israeli embassy by a man who is also alleged to have shouted "Free Palestine." Colorado Governor Jared Polis referenced the recency of that attack in a post on social media, saying it is unfathomable that the Jewish community is facing another terror attack here in Boulder on the eve of the holiday of Shavuot, no less. Now, let's turn to southern Gaza, where there have been conflicting accounts of death and violence surrounding an incident near a U.S.-Israeli-led aid distribution site. Right now, it's not entirely clear what happened. Gazan health officials say at least 31 Palestinians were killed and dozens injured in Rafah, with witnesses saying Israeli soldiers fired on people trying to collect aid. And the nearby Red Cross hospital reported receiving a, quote, mass casualty influx with 179 people brought in. The Israeli military at first denied opening fire, but later told NPR they did fire some warning shots toward what they called suspects about 1,000 yards from the aid site. They also released undated drone footage showing gunmen firing on Palestinians collecting aid. As news outlets are barred from the area, no one has been able to verify competing versions of events or verify the footage released by the IDF. The BBC spoke to a Bulgarian doctor working in Gaza who described the hospital as totally overwhelmed.
People were alerted that food will be distributed, and then there was mass shooting. I heard numbers of 200 injured brought into the hospital within 4 hours. Certainly, the emergency department at the moment is extremely busy with many young men who are severely injured, intubated on ventilators. Certainly, I have never seen something like that.
The Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, that's the name of the new U.S. and Israel-backed aid distribution group, described reports of Israeli shootings at their site as fake and said that supplies were handed out without incident. They published footage of calm scenes as crowds attended the area. What all of this underlines is the continued tension and distrust surrounding these sites. As we covered last week, this is not a typical aid program run by non-governmental agencies. One senior UN humanitarian official described the GHF program as engineered scarcity, with only 4 distribution sites planned in central and southern Gaza, secured by private U.S. security contractors. This comes as talks on a ceasefire appear to have stalled. Last week, President Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, took a proposal to Israel that would include a 60-day ceasefire and Hamas releasing 10 living and 18 deceased hostages in exchange for a number of Palestinian prisoners. Israel accepted the proposal, but over the weekend, Witkoff said he received Hamas's response and described it as unacceptable. NPR's Daniel Estrin explained Hamas's objections.
They want guarantees up front that Israel will not do what it did last time in the last ceasefire earlier this year, which is to get hostages back and then not enter talks on how to bring a permanent end to the war. So what Hamas wants is to spread out the release of hostages this time throughout the duration of the ceasefire to ensure that Israel holds its fire rather than free the hostages towards the beginning of the ceasefire. And Hamas has some other demands also, like it doesn't want humanitarian aid coming in through this new system the U.S. and Israel set up with a private American group where we have seen so much chaos.
Let's turn now to the war in Ukraine, where a new round of peace talks between Russia and Ukraine are expected to happen today in Istanbul. On Sunday, Ukraine carried out one of its broadest and most surprising attacks of the war. In a mission that took over a year to coordinate, Ukraine says it smuggled over 100 small drones into Russia using freight trucks, eventually releasing them to strike at 40 warplanes. Ukraine claims to have delivered damage amounting to $7 billion. For its part, Russia was said to have launched nearly 500 drones toward Ukraine, the majority of which were intercepted, though Ukrainian officials report at least 12 soldiers were killed and more than 60 others were wounded. Ukraine's forces are heavily depleted at this point in the war, so much so that in recent months, the government launched a new recruitment program to encourage younger people between the ages of 18 and 24 to enlist, with sign-on bonuses and perks like interest-free mortgages. Up until now, Ukrainian officials hoped they could largely spare Gen Z from the front lines, but the Wall Street Journal reports they can't afford to any longer. So far, the number of people signing up are modest. Russia, meanwhile, has made gains in recent months. Over the last month alone, their forces took more than 100 square miles of Ukrainian territory. And those gains can largely be credited to President Vladimir Putin's efforts to retool the entire country's economy in recent years to focus on the war.
Putin really used all the levers of the state to make the country as effective as possible in fighting the war. On the economic side, they basically just ramped up production of every major weapon system that they possibly could.
That's Thomas Grove with the Wall Street Journal.
First and foremost, we've seen a massive injection of cash from the state put into the defense industry. And that's seen new factories being built. We've seen new production lines, expansion of production lines. And so we've seen this kind of massive ramp up of the defense sector.
Along with investing billions of dollars to boost production lines so they can run 24/7, Russia also ramped up military recruitment efforts.
They were in desperate need of men, especially towards the end of 2022. So in addition to mobilizing, they also created this kind of huge incentive system where they basically gave people, in some cases, as much as they would earn in an entire year as that signing bonus.
Grove told us those payouts raised the standard of living for thousands of Russian people, particularly those from poorer parts of the country. At one point, more than 1,000 recruits were signing up to fight every day. But Grove says because Russia's economy now revolves so heavily around war, it could make Putin less willing to entertain peace talks over fears of jeopardizing this war-centric economy. Grove spoke with analysts who said even if Putin does agree to stop the fighting, Russia's other neighbors now fear they could become the new targets of his war machine instead.
The success economically and in terms of attracting people, has made a lot of analysts and policymakers in NATO very worried about, you know, what happens next. What kind of military are they going to have whenever the fighting's over? You know, once the fighting stops in Ukraine, can it pull back? And I think there's a lot of people who feel as though it will have trouble doing that.
Before we let you go, a few other stories we're following. Canadian wildfires have forced 25,000 residents to be evacuated from their homes as the province of Manitoba declared a state of emergency last week. Evacuations continued over the weekend, with the blazes in largely remote areas. The impact has also spread to some U.S. states. Haze and smoke loomed over New Jersey skies over the weekend, and air quality warnings have been issued for millions living in the Midwest. Experts say the month of June is critical for wildfire forecasting because that's when Western Canada tends to see most of its seasonal rainfall, which could determine what the rest of wildfire season looks like. In San Diego, an ICE raid at a popular Italian restaurant prompted swift community backlash as video of the incident circulated on social media. According to NBC 7 News, protesters surrounded patrol vehicles and confronted armed agents. The restaurant manager says two workers were detained. Mayor Todd Gloria, a Democrat, said these kinds of raids undermine trust. A special agent with the Department of Homeland Security told the local station KPBS that officials were, quote, executing a criminal search warrant. And finally, in Washington state, a truck transporting 70,000 honeybee hives crashed near the Canadian border. And in case you're wondering what that sounds like, this is the sound of 250 million bees roaming free, captured on video by beekeepers who were called to the scene. Local experts told Fox they're hopeful they will eventually recover most of the bees. Apparently, this kind of transportation is not uncommon because leaving bees in one location for too long can deplete resources for other pollinators. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the News app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next from GQ. The magazine goes inside the making of a new movie from Apple Original Films about the high-speed world of Formula One racing. One of the biggest stars in the sport, Lewis Hamilton, is producing the movie, and some of Hollywood's biggest names are literally in the driver's seats. If you're listening in the podcast app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.